was going through a bunch of these SMART seminars a month or two ago just to play around. And what was really funny is one of the guys, his computer was on his table and was pointed up. So he had a fluorescent light fixture right in the middle of his head and in their offices, and it was made him glow really weird. And I kept wanting to send him a message, but I was watching recorded video, so it wouldn't have done any good. But like, dude, set a background, come on.
Yeah,
that's why.
Hey, I'm in my dining room now. So
I have art here.
Hey, what did you say, Kenny?
I said we're on the air, Jan.
Yeah, we're on the air. Hey, so welcome everybody to Sound Brokers Mastermind Group. You know, people are straggling in, but because Michael Brown has to leave early, I said, you know what? Let's just start this meeting on time, you know, or at least a minute late. But what I've noticed now, and maybe you could say, well, first of all, let me give you the introduction. This is Sound Brokers Mastermind Group, a group put together so to help us cope through the tough times so that when things get better, we're all still here. Oh, is that funny? All right. I love that. I love that concept. And I'm glad that you're all here, because basically the reality is that we need each other now more than ever before. I'm convinced of that. We all need each other. And if you're listening in and you're not part of the panel, I want you to know that I really believe this from the bottom of my heart. We need to stick together as a group, because the reality is that the forces outside around us, we've got, you know, we're stronger as a group, and that as a division, an individual. And I think Abraham Lincoln said it best, you know, I think I'm going to the theater tonight. I wonder what I'm going to be doing tomorrow. That's it. You know, no, he said, united we stand, divided we fall. And so we better get united very quick. And speaking of united, there so far, they just let go 30,000 people or something like that. So, you know, that might be an exaggeration, but they've just let go, and American Airlines have let go some people. And
hear that there was so many billions of dollars for the airline industry granted by the government to the airline industry?
Not exactly. What happened was, so Trump broke off, told Mnuchin to stop negotiating on any bailout package until after the election. Then last night, he sent word that if he got three standalone bills, in other words, bills that literally just had one subject matter in them, he would sign them. $1,200 for everybody. PPP, a second round of PPP, and a $25 billion for the airlines. But they had to be standalone. But he would sign those as soon as they crossed his desk.
Well, the all that stuff should have been standalone from the very beginning.
The fact that these politicians put in all these other stipulations.
I've been a proponent of line item veto since the 80s.
Oh, absolutely. But it doesn't exist. And the bigger problem that exists now, particularly with the airline, I think the 1200 would probably go fine. I think the PPP would probably go through, but there's too many current Congress people who remember 09 and 10 when they were accused of picking winners and losers by bailing out banks, but not bailing out, you know, these people and we'll, you know,
right.
So they're not interested in anything that is targeted to one specific industry.
Should they do a round for Disney, who just laid off, 28,000 people?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the argument behind the Restart Act. The Restart Act is universal. It applies to pretty much all businesses in some way, shape, or form. So that's the argument behind passing the Restart Act.
Okay. If I might be so bold, I just got a letter from Michael Strickland, and I'll just read it if you haven't seen it yet. Late last night, the White House put out a statement to Congress that if three clean standalone bills were put before the president, they would get signed all at once. The three bills, $25 billion in funding for the airline industry, a second round of PPP payments for qualifying firms, and immediate issuance of $1,200 per person stimulus check to qualifying Americans. It is now up to Congress to come together in a bipartisan manner. That is funny.
And quickly deliver these three bills.
Quickly deliver on these bills. We may or may not see this happen, but the White House has made it known that these bills would be signed should they be presented. There may or may not be other attempts of this nature to present more clean standalone bills. Legislatures shy away from these types of actions as it gives them no leverage at the same time pass along bills that do not have bipartisan support. I continue to receive reach out from House members who are most concerned that no relief bill hurts their chances of reelection. Rank and file continue to push leadership hard on both sides of the aisle. Stay tuned. The positive takeaway from this is that there is still active motion towards providing assistance to America. And so that was what Michael Strickland said. And I will add something. As you all know, because I've made it such a point to tell you, that I am going through an amazing episode of bank fraud. And I have called my congressman, and finally a week later, I got a call from my congressman or one of the executive assistants in her office. And after we started talking about my problems and what they're going to do for me, and they are going to make some moves for me, we started talking about the restart. And of course, they are so aware, being here in Nevada, and especially in Las Vegas, where her district is, she's completely aware of how much money we need and what's going on. So there is a huge movement that they're talking to all sorts of people to try to get this passed. So there is some hope, you know? And there's a lot of good intentions. And I want to be positive when I say that, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So there we are. Let's who's got something they want to say about that?
Well, Jan.
So we're saying that these three bills that were presented or are being presented or in the process, Mike, does that mean that they're in the process of being presented to Congress and the House?
Not yet.
No, those bills don't even exist. It was just Trump saying, give me these three things and I'll sign them.
Well,
as far as I know, at this point, they don't even exist.
There was a bill that existed on the bailout of the airlines. Congress said they would pass it and it would run it through on the 29th of September. And then Nancy pulled it and voted into her CARES 2 Act bill or whatever it was, and really upset a lot of the people that thought they had a deal done. And what then is led to all the layoffs and the problems going on, because the issue the airlines are having too is that they're being audited. FDIC is auditing banks and people that have money on them. They're really tightening down their credit on the airlines and whether they'll cease them, go in and seize airlines.
Well, the interesting thing about that, Ken, is since 9/16 that I've been going through this bank fraud thing, I finally have got somebody to tell me that it has to do with the PPP loan that I got, because they refunded all of the money with the exception of the PPP amount. And so when I said to her, well, that's the amount I got from PPP, she said, well, I can't say anything about it. But if I were you, you might want to contact PPP and see what's going on over there. And that's when I realized, now that I've contacted PPP, there it's going to be escalated. But that's my problem and not your problem. But the reality is that they are definitely looking into, and all articles I read about this thing, it's a challenge, man, because the banks are getting such pressure on to start putting back the paperwork into Congress, into with the SBA to get the money. And now the scrutiny is off the hook. So one thing I would recommend, if you got PPP money and you moved it from one account to another, I would make sure that to be safe, make sure that you're safe, that you move that PPP money and keep the balance below that certain level of the money where you got that bank, you know, move it to another bank. And that way they can't touch it. But because I am freaking out over this right now, because I know you, and you all know me, I'm very anal. And I did everything to the book, and I had somebody helping me from the bank go through everything. My payroll is done by ADP. So just then and there alone, I should have been fine. But anyway, that's beside the point. I don't want to dwell on my own problems, but I just want to let you know that if you have money in your bank and you took that PPP loan, you might seriously want to think about, you know, lowering your balances in that particular bank and moving it to another bank. I don't know if it's true or not. I know what happened to me.
We are concerned because it turned your hair gray. Jesus.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I used to be blonde. I used to be blonde and 6'10", you know, but, you know, now, you know, I no longer play for the New York Yankees. What can I tell you? That's what happens when you retire.
Yeah, so, Jan, yeah, this is for that. If your PPP is the same bank as all your banking stuff is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because mine isn't. So hopefully there's a bit of safety in there.
There you go, Bruce.
All my stuff is Chase and my PPP is USA. So
how did you do that? Because, like, I thought you had to have a relationship established with the bank at which you applied.
Here's the funny thing. I went to Chase originally because my savings, my personal accounts and my business accounts are at Chase, right?
And what's the last four digits of your social security number?
Right. So I went and filled out the paperwork for Chase, and I applied like two or three times, and they turned me down every time. And my wife said, try USA because they're, you know, they've been much more, I guess, lenient or something. So the night we filled out the paperwork for USA, they called me on the phone and we dotted the I's and crossed the T's and everything went through, and it didn't matter that I didn't have an account with them. Now,
that's amazing.
I had heard that preferably they want you to go to the bank that you have your accounts with. But Chase wouldn't give me mine, and USA did give it to me. So that's just kind of strange.
They made it very, very difficult. With big banks, the community banks were getting funded way before the big banks, because when I applied for my loan, and I don't know about you guys, but they put me through an inordinate amount of paperwork that I had to provide before they would even process it. And I lost out on the first round. I didn't get mine till the second round.
Experience was to the contrary of that. I felt like it was a normal amount of paperwork or less for applying for a loan, and it was easy because it was all in this online portal, and you just upload these documents, keep uploading until they say, yeah, you're complete, you know, and then it was done. And then, like, a few weeks later, whenever it was, I got a check or got money. No, I didn't even get a check. I got money in my account.
Early on, I applied and it didn't happen, and then I had enough W-2 income, so I'm actually on unemployment in Arizona, who's actually been pretty quick. You know, like, they were the first state to approve that extra $300 for 6 weeks in July. But now I'm concerned because what they say is the account balance is just about out, and I don't know if there's an automatic extension. And, you know, you go to the website, it says 39 weeks, but I'm at 26 weeks, and
Well, that's an interesting point. So I don't know about in Arizona, but in California, you know, there's Facebook groups about California unemployment and stuff. There's probably Facebook groups for Arizona unemployment also that you could look at. But interesting thing is that I was seeing, you know, people talking about those extra weeks, the extra 13 weeks that we're all entitled to because somebody said so, right? And I was like, I wonder if I'll get it because mine's about running out. In two more weeks, I'll be done. And so and then I get a text message today from the EDD that says your extra 13 weeks have been approved. It'll automatically be paid. So I was like, well, that's pretty great.
Oh, that's great. I was trying to look at the Arizona Unemployment Division site, and didn't, you know, it says 39 weeks, but in my account, it says my balance is almost up. And I even, you know, you can't call anybody, you know, and so I sent an email to their contact, and I haven't heard back, and it's been almost a week, so we'll see.
Oh, I guess Mike was waving goodbye. I thought he was raising his hand to talk, but I guess he was waving goodbye. He said he had to leave, right?
Mike said he had to leave.
Oh, so he was leaving.
His daughter has a recital, and so he was going to his recital, which not that this has anything to do with anything, but Brian, you were going to say something before we interrupted you.
No, that's all right. No, when I jumped on, you were talking about Unity, and I was just going to swing the conversation the other direction. A friend told me this the other day. He said, well, why don't all of you guys in the sound business just not mic another political rally, cut them out of the workload, and just cut them completely off, then they'll come around to being supportive of you.
Yeah, so. Well, certainly I haven't been asked to do a political thing, but I have done many in the past, and I've done Clinton and Bush and whatever, and I hate doing political things. They suck. You know, access is so restricted, and they're a pain in the ass. So if I got offered one, I'd probably turn it down.
Well, some of the biggest some of the biggest political things in the country are happening over the next few weeks, and they happened last week. The political debate, I mean, the presidential and vice presidential debates. OSA is providing the equipment for some aspect of that. I'm not sure what aspect, but they're, you know, their guys are busy working on that, and they're at the vice presidential debate site now, having gotten there a few days ago to set up. And for some people, that's a big gig.
Well, that's what they say.
Well, it's going to be tonight.
Yeah, right.
Tonight. I mean, and I would say to you, you know, politicians are so pompous. If they didn't have a PA, they would get a bullhorn or something like that, or they'd just talk louder, you know, they'd figure a way around it. So at least somebody should make some money in our industry, you know?
There's no audience here in Miami for the event at the Arch Center, if they actually have that debate.
Oh, which one is that? When's that?
That's the next presidential debate at the Arch Center in Miami. And right now the mayor is trying to call it off because he doesn't want him here because of COVID.
Well, there's no doubt about it that, you know, there's no doubt about it that the president of the United States right now has COVID, and he has no consideration for anybody around him whatsoever in that respect. So I'm sure that he, you know, as the polls show, and we're not getting political here right now, even though I am sure every one of us feel the same way I feel.
But I'm not sure. I wouldn't be so sure about that, Jan.
But I like to think that I feel like everybody else feels. See, I could touch, I bleed if I get cut, you know, that kind of stuff. But the reality is that, you know, that there is now a New York Times breaking story, and it makes perfect sense that in the last debate, the bull in the china shop might be because he was already under some steroid treatment at that particular time. And that could affect it could have affected his personality. Who knows? I'm not saying it did or didn't, but I'm just saying that COVID is a serious problem that we have to deal with, because it's keeping all of us from working. Because if there wasn't COVID right now, we would all not be here. We would all be working.
Working like usual. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you a stupid question. So if he's got it, like, you know, we know that he was tested positive like about a week ago, I guess that was. So does he still test positive now? Is he still contagious? You know, for how long is somebody contagious? And is it because, no, come to think of it, I remember it was the 1st of October when he was diagnosed, or, you know, broadcast that he was positive. So because the next debate is on the 15th, are we concerned that he's going to be contagious on the 15th is my question.
The mayor of Miami is concerned. The mayor of Miami is Republican, so it's not politically motivated why he's saying that. The mayor of Miami had COVID back in March, and he recovered. So I think it has to do with personal experience, and he just doesn't want anybody in this city affected that doesn't need to be. So
sure. So what about, isn't the state of Florida kind of open though? Aren't they allowing gatherings?
The state of Florida is, you know, I don't know what other state to compare it to. We have everything going on down here and nothing going on down here. Some of the places are starting to reopen. This weekend we have some clubs that stay open late, dance clubs and stuff like that. And we are pushing for them to use every method of sanitization that they can so that they can remain open. I know that the pubs in Scotland are now closed once again, because once they opened for 2 weeks, now the numbers went through the roof. We don't want the same thing to happen down here. No, most of the places down here are not open. Anything that's going on in any of the venues are just video shoots with only crew. And the only thing that's open are sports facilities, like you've seen football games and not even basketball games. I guess that's still played in the bubble, even though it's the playoffs.
Which happens to be in Florida, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's Orlando.
Right. So interesting. I just saw somebody posted on Facebook something about it was like a ballroom with normal dinner seating. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And they said, nice to get back to this or something like that.
Private events are probably getting away with it. They're having to show the local municipality their plan and how they're going to keep people safe. And then it gets approved on a per case basis.
Yeah, I would say, you know, this would lead me into saying about what's going on and around the rest of the world. I'm a big tennis fan. I play tennis, and Roland Garros is going on. And the first matches, they didn't have anybody there. And now they're putting about, I don't know, I'm not exactly sure how many people are in there, but it was really weird to hear him hit the ball and then all of a sudden, you know, hear a crowd applaud. And it shouldn't have been weird, but it was really cool to hear that crowd applaud. And the other thing is Tina found this thing, and it says the show is going on. China and Italy are among nations allowing exhibitions of considerable size right now. And we'll throw that link in the, Tina will throw that link into the chat. But basically, so things are starting to come back. And basically in China, who one of my best friends lives there, he says it's completely back to normal. You know, he says it's completely back to normal. Everything, you know, everything that his life is completely back to normal. So there, it is possible to beat this thing, but you got to, you know, the question is how did a mask become a political statement? And if people would just do some, a little bit of social distancing, wear a mask just for the fun of it for a couple of months, then we can get back to doing concerts, you know? So I don't know the answer about that, but I do know this, which has nothing to do with what I just said. Today, I got a call from somebody who I didn't know, found me on the internet, actually Googled me on the internet, because he was referred to me by AEG. AEG, the guy's looking for a stage, and he and his rep at AEG told him to call me. So there you go. So AEG knows about me somehow. So I'm going to try to get them on the show. See if I can get them, you know, I think it would be a great show to do Live Nation and AEG at the same time. What are the odds you think that's going to happen, guys? You think that would possibly be
slim and none? That's like, could you get, I don't know, could you get 8 Day and Claire Brothers on the same show? Oh, that's right. You probably could.
I did.
Right. So I'm kidding. They're fierce competitors, aren't they? AEG Live and Live Nation.
Well, right now, I'm sure they're not competing as much as they used to. And I would think that right now that if they don't unite as an industry of concert promoters to get this together, there won't be any concert industry soon enough.
So in addition to that, I would like to suggest getting some production managers and some tour managers involved in the conversation and getting their input in what they're doing. A lot of them are revising their riders to include sanitization clauses along, you know, that fits right in with the security clause, you know, limiting backstage access, all that kind of stuff. So I'd love to see that if we could invite a few people.
Okay, I just made a note of that.
Yeah, there was, I don't remember where it was, but there was some posting on Facebook about a concert that happened in an arena with social distancing. Like you saw a overall shot of the arena, and it was maybe 100 people on the arena floor where there would have been normally been a couple thousand, and they were all spaced out in seats or something. It was interesting.
But spaced out were they?
They were very spaced out, more than 6 feet for sure.
Yeah, now the marijuana is legal. Yeah, of course they were spaced out. Right? Yeah.
But now then there's also SNL. You guys heard about SNL, you know, Saturday Night Live in New York City. And they had an audience of 80 for both their dress rehearsal and their show last Saturday. And they're doing it again this Saturday. And it's better than nothing, you know, better than doing it the way they were doing it over Zoom. At least they can do it the way they used to do it and just with precautions in place.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it. It was, Chris Rock was very good on the show. I thought he did a very, very, very good job. Also, I had heard that Usher now just announced that he's going to do his residency as of July 2021. So that was announced. And also Sarah Brightman. What? Las Vegas. Okay. That's in Las Vegas.
So he's hoping. So wishful thinking, July 2021. Okay, good.
That's right. And Sarah Brightman announced that her October 20th concert, so we're now postponed till the end of next year, to 2021.
Well, didn't Elton John announce his American tour, but it's not until May of 22?
Correct.
Yeah, I guess that's not like not now. You know, I'm not really sure if 2022, is actually a date in my calendar right now, you know.
But I mean, he's taking
goes up to 2022.
I think he's going somewhere in Europe late 21, but you know,
New Zealand late 2021.
Okay.
And maybe it's because New Zealand was known at one time as being one of the less infected places in the world.
Yeah, I've been invited to New Zealand and Asia for the next fall. We'll see if that happens.
Neat. Yeah. Is that with Julio?
Yeah.
Neat. Well, so Mindy Hebert, you know who Mindy Hebert is? The sax player, jazz saxophonist, or jazz and blues. Anyway, she has tour dates on her Instagram starting March. She has actual like show venues in Florida. Let's see, Daytona, Tampa Bay, and then Burke's Jazz Fest, wherever that is, and then Seabreeze Jazz Fest, and then New Haven, Connecticut, May 1st, and then California on June 4th. And so if they're talking about a California show on June of 2021, that's inspiring to me. That makes me feel good.
Yeah. Look, there. A lot of us do want to get back to work. I know that I want to get back to work for sure. And I'm sure if I say, put your hands up, we'll all want to get back to work. But the question is how do we do it? I mean, really, that's really what it comes down to. How do we get back to work? And what is a way, you know, like right now, you know, one of the things that I say about, you know, what other alternatives do we have to stay alive in this particular time? And I got to tell you, without mentioning any names, this week was a very hard week on me because I got calls from four major players in our industry of regional companies. And every one of them was telling me that if they can't get something going very soon, that my November or December, it's going to be, you know, chapter seven. And that to me is very, very disturbing. It's very disturbing.
Bleak.
And so I don't know what the answer is, but I am sure trying to figure it out. You know, I think I'm
the
smart
answer
guy.
Is that relief bill, that Restart Act. If they can get that Restart Act to get through, and we as citizens can just keep writing to our representatives and let them know that we're interested in having the Restart Act get passed, what can we do? That's the most we can do as citizens, right?
Yeah, well, I think that I would hate to say that, and I hate to say it because we are Americans, as you know, it's all blue and red states, but the red states are the ones that have to be, you know, the red states are the ones that really have to be really pounded on, because those are the ones that don't seem to care as much as those, like, you know, that are happening in, like, let's just say California or New York, you know. And I guess that's where when you think of the entertainment industry, you don't think of Norman, Oklahoma. You don't think of Peoria, Illinois. But you do think of Nashville. You do think of Nashville. And Ken, what are you seeing going on down there with your people? How are your senators and congressmen, you know, relating to what's going on? Do you actually reach out to them yourself, or do you wait for Michael Strickland to do that?
I do some of send out stuff. I haven't talked to him personally. I've got a thing tomorrow with the over at the Opry House with the CEO of Starbucks. We're going to do a PSA type thing in the Congress tomorrow. But other than that, here is just waiting to open. You know, the surrounding counties in Nashville are fine. Everything's going fine. In fact, I'm going to dinner tonight in the next county instead of Nashville, because it's such a hassle in this city. So, you know, we'll carry on when we get through it, you know, just when we can open up. Right now, everything, we're getting told of rehearsal time starting, you know, late March, April, into May, and a lot of tours that postponed in March or in April this year are imprinted in the same schedule next year. So it's the same city, same schedule, I believe, because they probably didn't give back the ticket money is what I suspect.
Yeah, well, they said if they would have canceled the show, then they would have had to give back the money. But because they postponed the show, they can hold on to the money.
Yeah, I know David Morgan has talked about that scenario with James Taylor, where, you know, their tickets were all sold. And, you know, I don't know if he knows absolutely what's going to happen, but I don't think that they've done the postponement thing.
The interesting thing about that is the financial, like, how does that money work? Like, they've already, so companies like Live Nation or whoever promotes James Taylor's tour, right, already has those billions of dollars from all those ticket sales. They had it, you know, months ago, right, from those ticket sales. And now they're just sitting on it, using it to support their company. And are they going to be able to support those shows when those shows actually happen, I guess is the question, right? Because, yeah, that's a lot of money.
Well, I heard the chairman of Live Nation say that they're not holding the money, that they've released the money to the venues. And that's why they can't return it. So, you know, that's what I heard when I forgot the guy's name offhand. But he did do a live interview, and you can Google it, the chairman of Live Nation. And this was back in about April or May that he did this. So,
So you think they released all the ticket money to the venues for refund, you mean, or for to pay the venue for their venue?
To pay the venue for the venue.
So then that's not going to be all of the ticket money. It's going to be maybe 20% or something, right? It can't be a huge percentage.
Usually money has to sit in escrow till they do this show.
Yeah, and I really don't know the percentage of the monies of what they get, but usually I would assume that the money doesn't go hard to the promoter or to the venue until the show takes place.
Right. Well, I think that's
the reason. Sitting in escrow.
That's the reason the conversation between postponement and cancellation. And while it's not happened to me, I've heard a couple of guys say, well, we're postponing our 21 event, our 20 event until 21. Well, you already got one on the book for 21. So really you cancel the 21 show and depending on how your contract's written, you're owed money if the show's canceled as a vendor. If they don't cancel it.
Yeah.
Out in the time frame.
Well, as the great Houdini said, hocus pocus, you know, and there it is. It's, you know, it's like, where is the money, you know? And that's a good question. Where is the money and what are people doing? You know, what are the individuals doing? I mean, I've talked to some people saying, hey, look, you know, I pay for my Garth Brooks tickets here at Allegiant Stadium. And I know that show's going on. So I don't want my money back. I want Garth Brooks. I want to see the Garth Brooks show.
Well, Garth Brooks has sold out Bank of America Stadium, the football field. Supposed to have done the show in May. They postponed it now three different times. He's now on schedule, I think, for May of 21. But I don't see us, when they only allowed 7% of the football fans in, I don't see them doing that in May of 21 yet. Now, there could be a change, but they just keep pushing the concert back about 60 days at a time.
Yeah.
Which is good enough to keep it in postponement mode instead of cancellation mode, right? And that way they keep the money and the people keep their tickets.
Right.
Yeah.
It's extenuating circumstances to say the least. I mean, when has this ever happened in history before, you know?
Well, everything we're seeing right now has never happened before in history, because when you think about it, the reality is that historically speaking, that when things got bad, like i.e. the depression, when it really was bad in the depression, or 2007, people still wanted to be entertained. Now people are frightened to death to be entertained. And as far as the movie theaters go, has anybody heard anything about Regal Cinemas? Because I was under the impression that this was there last week. Has anybody heard anything about
that? That's what I heard as well.
You know, and Disney, what they did is they had this movie Mulan, which they did as a pay-per-view, I guess. You bought, instead of a pay-per-view, you paid $30 and anyone in your family could watch it and as much as you want on the Disney Channel. And so, but I heard that $30 didn't cut the mustard for them. It was too expensive and a lot of families didn't do that. But they feel that if they drop it down to 20, so the question is do they really, is this going to change the whole movie theater industry? That's something that we need to know.
Well, if Regal shuts down, isn't that kind of a major change to the movie theater industry in the U.S. at least?
Oh yeah, huge. And I also heard when they decided to withhold the James Bond film that
that was the final straw.
That was a tipping point for some of the theater owners and stuff like that.
It also did that to two of the big, in England, two of the big theaters are going down too because of the James Bond movie being pushed back.
Yeah. And you wonder whether they're really going to push that James Bond movie back, or they're saying, look what we learned from Disney. If we put this out to direct to pay, we don't have to cut these theaters in, you know?
And who knows? Profit more. Their profit margin becomes quite a bit higher, right?
It would become huge.
A lot of money on the tickets.
Yeah, they don't have to share the money. They don't have to share the profit with the theaters. But I don't know, because that's way above my pay grade. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages, I just want to say this. There are some expressions for those people that are listening overseas and wondering what we're talking about. There are some idioms, like, you know, that expression or slang, which stands for, like, for example, above your pay grade. It doesn't mean necessarily that you're not getting paid as much as the person who has the right answer. It just means that you can't give us, it's a slang for, hey, I can't answer this. Somebody else above me has to do it, you know, in another position. That's all it means. So, you know, it's the same as you can't.
Please don't take these slang expressions literally. That's right.
You know, and if I say to you, you know, look deep into my eyes, you're getting sleepy, you know, don't think anything of it either. You know, that's it. You know, or like, you can't get blood from a stone or a turnip, depending where you are. And speaking of blood from a stone or a turnip, Steve Sluder, what is going down with your man Kennedy? What's happening in your state? Have you called on him, or what's going on there?
You know, I get the typical letter back, the standard form letter from Kennedy. Well, all of them, actually. That's all they're doing. Same crap everybody else is getting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a question for everybody, though. Has anybody actually filed on the PPP? Have you filed the forgiveness paperwork? Has anybody been able to do that? Or are you still getting jacked around with it? Because our bank keeps saying that the government keeps changing the rules, so we haven't been able to apply for the forgiveness part.
We just sent it in this week. They finally.
And I'm telling you, I sent it in as soon as it was due, and that is why that's why the bank has closed my accounts. They're saying I committed fraud. That's why I'm telling you, be careful with this thing, because they don't know what they're doing. Nobody knows what they're doing. And somehow I got flagged for fraud. And I'm telling you, it was just like one day I had plenty of operating cash, and the next day it was frozen. And then it's been going on almost 4 weeks now, and I haven't seen anything. You know, I'm just blah, 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 blah. You know, it's not a fun thing. So be careful. I highly recommend that you guys think about it from my standpoint of view, and maybe I'm wrong, but wouldn't it be nice if I was right, that you had your money moved somewhere else so that when they close your account or freeze your account, they can't grab all your money? I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, the bank just keeps saying that the rules keep changing, so we haven't been able to send ours in yet.
Oh, Steve, can I ask which bank it is? Wouldn't that be B of A?
It's Hancock Whitney, which is a big bank down here.
BOA was telling us the same thing for weeks until last week.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, there was a big article in the Times about this. This is not unique. There was a huge article in the Times that they're slowing down this forgiveness, because nobody knows what the rules keep changing. So there was an article in the New York Times about it.
Well, you know, I had heard a rumor at one time, and this, don't get your hopes up or anything, but at one time I had heard a rumor that something as crazy as this might happen. And that is that because this PPP forgiveness is going to be so confusing to everybody involved, that if you got a PPP loan below a certain number, let's say whatever the number was, $100,000 or something, it was just automatically going to be forgiven. Has anybody heard that rumor?
Yeah, 150.
I actually have heard that.
I had heard that also.
So the question is that really going to happen, do we think? Chris, I guess if you heard it, and you must not think it's going to happen.
I heard that it was 150, but that was 6 weeks ago, at least, maybe 2 months ago. And since then, I've not heard anything to confirm that.
Yeah, same here.
So they've accepted the paperwork. We'll see if it happens.
It would be nice if it was just easy like that. Just a blanket statement. Oh, you got less than this amount? You're forgiven. Forget it.
Yeah. Well, I can assure you that I will keep you abreast of what's happening with my situation. You know,
please.
Whether you want to know it or not, you know, that's it. I'll keep you abreast, but I will get to the bottom of it. Just an FYI, right now it's in the escalation department of PPP, and it's almost impossible to get, it's very, very difficult because the bank is so big and there's really nobody to talk to, and one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. So, but I will keep you abreast on what's going on with my situation. And I'm sure it'll work out in the long run. It's just the short run that makes me frustrated because, you know, everything is going the way it's going. You know, it's like, let me ask you this, guys. Is anybody having trouble sleeping at night? Is anybody having any trouble falling asleep?
I'm not having trouble, but I'm having horrible gig nightmares. They're really bizarre nightmares.
You know, because I read an article in the New York Times about how to get a better night's sleep. And I will put that in the chat as well, because and this is, you know, homeopathically, not basically by drugs, although drugs do work. I will say that, you know, last night after all of this banking thing, this was the first time that I could remember that I had to take something to help me go to sleep, because my mind was so full-blundered after talking to these other people regarding what their situation was and thinking about my situation. And, you know, because, you know, I'm in a microcosm of what you guys do because I support your industry. You know, it's an interesting dilemma, because and that's why I say we need each other. We need each other. We need to be able to talk to each other, because I'm telling you that there are people out there that don't know what to do, and they are beside themselves. And I highly recommend that you stay in touch with your friends and associates that are other business owners, and give them counsel and comfort, just so that they don't go insane. I'm reading now, and maybe you guys are reading it too, that there are plenty of people out there that are going through marital problems, divorce. I hear suicide rates are up. And so more than ever before, we really need to be focusing on one another and talking to each other and being supportive of one another. I can't stress that enough.
There is no doubt in my mind that when push comes to shove, the cure ultimately will be more destructive than the disease. I have zero doubt about that. And that's not to minimize the severity of the disease, but, you know, I'll leave it at that. I did have a little thought going back to the movie thing for a minute and how it relates to live events, in that if you buy Mulan or James Bond, maybe, or whatever, any movie, and watch it at home, yes, there's part of the in-theater experience that you're missing, but ultimately you're looking at a 2D source on a 2D device. And I just wonder if that's not easier to get over, because now you don't have people talking or kicking your chair or whatever. Although in the new theaters, they have these recliners now, they can't kick your chair. But in our industry, I don't think there's ever going to be a replacement for a live audience watching live performance. And I don't think it translates the same way in terms of movies. So I'd be interested to see how that plays out.
I agree with you on that. I mean, now in the movies, if I do go to a theater to see a movie, I'm wanting to hear the full surround, the Dolby effects and all of that with the movie that I'm not going to pick up on a Star Wars movie or something like that.
Right.
But I do think there's that event, and if you've got the right front of house engineer mixing your sound, and you've got that great event, you've got the camaraderie with everybody around. Interesting thing is, I'm in early discussions for next year in case we can get spring productions going off. I bought a couple of video walls this year, and the local production or the local event organizers are now thinking about that way to spread the people out in the viewing area.
I know for a long time, if I'm going to the movies, I'm going to go see big action blockbuster movies at the theater, because the impact is worth the hassle and the experience.
Right.
I'm going to watch a character study, I'm not going to the movies.
I mean, IMAX, for example, when you go to see an IMAX, it's a full experience, or a 3D movie, it's a full experience, you know?
Right.
That kind of stuff.
And the 3D movies I've seen, they're better. I went and saw, what was the Sandra Bullock, the astronaut movie a few years ago?
I know which one you're talking about with George Clooney.
Yeah, right. I went and saw that in 3D, and it was okay, but you know, still it goes out at the edge of the glasses in your peripheral vision, and you know, I think it was a little bit gimmicky. I mean, it wasn't horrible, you know, it was well done in that regard, but you know, I'm not going to see The Notebook in a theater. Sorry.
Right. Well, a great movie to see in 3D is anything by Pixar, because it's all animated. And if you really want to see something really cool in 3D, I would say James Cameron movie. Oh God, I just got, what's the name of the Avatar. James Cameron?
Avatar.
Avatar is pretty good. You know, but look, if we can't go to the movies, jokes like what I'm about to tell you, nobody will understand, right? So this guy goes to the movie theater, right? And he's got a duck with him, and he goes to the box office, and the box office says, hey, you can't bring a duck in here. So he doesn't know place to put the duck, so he goes around the corner, and he shoves the duck down his pants, and now he's going in the movie theater, and the lights go down, the duck is moving around, so he lets the duck out of his pants, you know? And these two women are sitting next to each other, and one gives the elbow to the woman next to you, says, my God, look at that. And the woman says, hey, if you've seen one, you've seen them all. And the woman says, yeah, but this one's eating my popcorn. So just thought I would share that joke with you. We can't tell jokes like that anymore. Yeah, but this
Jan, this just in, you're broadcasting this on Facebook, on live streaming it on Facebook right now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so there's a gentleman on there that just Facebook messaged me. He's looking for how to get in touch with you or something like that. And anyway, are you watching the Facebook comments on your
page? No, I'm not. Eyes. As you might know, that I have a different background today. This is my reality of my office. And the internet in my neighborhood at home went down. And so I am using a jerry-rig system to make this happen. So I don't have the same tools that I normally would have at the house. So what does the guy say?
I will read his comments. He's curious. Can you tell me what the chat with Jan is based on today? He doesn't seem to respond. And then a few minutes later, he says, guessing since we have not chatted before, these are not appearing in your normal message feed. And I said, wow, sorry. He said, no apology, was just looking to engage, but in Jan fashion, not a lot of info on how. So I'm not sure what that means. But anyway, Chris,
well, there it is.
See your messages.
Obviously, I'm not a clear communicator, you know. But
we're not watching that Facebook comment feed. Is the point, right?
Obviously, you know. So people don't always read, And that's one of the problems. You know, Woody Allen said it best, you know, when his father got the ransom note, he only read half of it. And, you know, he was in captivity for a long time, you know, because he fell asleep while reading the ransom note. But that's the challenge. Most people don't read. And they realize that if that person would have read the whole Megillah there, he would have known that to be part of the live conversation, he would have had to get the pre-invitation and to contact me through direct message, which he probably did, and I'm not paying any attention. So there you go.
So, yeah, he might have. But hey, I got a totally unrelated to that question, and that is about that extra $300 per week. Some people have said five, some people have said six payments, so $300 a week extra. Do we know anything about a continuation of that extra amount of some sort?
As far as I know, that was a one-off, and that there would need to be some other action, either executive order or somebody getting some bill to the president that he's willing to sign. I know in Arizona, I think we were the very first state. So for me, it's come and gone, and it was $300 extra, and it lasted for 6 weeks. And I believe that the states had the option of throwing in $100, and I don't know of any state that's actually coughed in their money, which is why it was 300, not 400, because remember, 400 was a number that was bandied about. So, you know, that's driven by your state unemployment people. And
so,
you know,
so then the only chance we have of getting additional unemployment payments would be if the PUA gets extended somehow, right?
Well, you know,
a bill
something like that. I didn't do PPP because I had the wherewithal to do unemployment.
No, but I'm saying PUA was the pandemic unemployment assistance.
Unemployment assistance. Yeah, it would have to be reauthorized. Government.
That was the 600.
Right. That was in the first bill, right?
And then it was extended by executive order for $400/$300.
Right. So I'm wondering if anybody's heard any talk about that being extended again, I guess is the main question.
I think it would be lost in the current bickering by our two reprehensible parties at this time.
The executive order said it was supposed to go to the end of the year until it got sued by Congress, said that he wasn't capable of executive ordering the money, and it got stopped.
I find that humorous because Congress has been abdicating its role as the body that does the spending bills for umpteen years, well before Trump. I mean, the national budget has been continuing resolutions forever. I mean, it's
looks like that guy that was talking to me on Facebook just logged on, by the way.
Yeah, I just sent him an invite. But you see, a miracle. There he is. It's Chris Musgrave, everybody. Hi, Chris.
Well, how you doing, Jen?
Doing well.
So I had a few things I just was hoping to touch on with everybody, that there's a few things that...
There's a very long...
You've got an echo there, Chris.
It should be gone.
Turn off your Facebook, Chris.
Facebook is off. Facebook is off. All right, you got me clean now?
Yes.
Because I'm up in the woods and internet is also terrible here. So there were a couple of comments that I want to make. Number one is Live Nation AEG are at each other's throats more than ever right now, because now is the time for each of them to be able to gobble up venues for pennies on the dollar, and both are doing exactly that. From the touring standpoint, pre-production has been folding over dates on everybody. Managers have 2 to 3 separate holds per month for each individual act they have. So every venue is basically running 3 to 5 calendars of holds for the possibility scenarios coming from the touring world. Nobody knows when that switch is going to flip. You have certain markets and genres that'll go right now, today. You have some artists that say, I'm not doing anything till 2022. I don't care what anybody says, or how much money they offer. But across that front, one of our biggest concerns, and this is where you guys kind of come in on this, you know, especially with gear, a lot of vendors won't be solvent when tour returns. And as much as they're telling everybody they're going to be solvent, a lot of production managers are concerned that they're going to get out there a month and somebody's going to go belly up mid-run. You know, and there are some vendors that are going to claim they're good because they're hoping that tour is going to hold them off, or that's the one that's they're hoping to maybe speak if you. But these are the conversations happening amongst the touring world, is which venues at what levels will exist, what vendors will be solvent enough to do business with. And the big question is, how are you going to crew it? In the case of a pandemic and in such a litigious society, if one person on that bus tests positive, are you sending that whole bus home? No artist is going to cover a contingency of a second bus. Nobody's going to put retainer holds on crew. So the logistics side from the touring, you know, picking up on some of your conversations, I just wanted to chime in and saying this is what's happening on this side of the conversation.
Interesting. Well, thank you. Chris, so people don't know who you are, maybe you could tell them a little bit about who you are and what you do so that we get your side.
I'm pushing 30 years as a tour manager and production manager. I recently accepted a position as chief innovation officer for OSA. I've been kicking around longer than some, not as long as others.
Chief innovation officer. That sounds like contrived position. What is that? What's the deal? You know, what's the job description for that?
It means chief shitster.
Okay. Didn't I see you on a webcast with Jim Rizgin and some other folks about the, what's that event called?
So yeah, you probably saw Rizgin and I'm also the director of Live Production Summit, which is the reincarnation of Tourling, which I heard of. My personal company is a company called Tour Pros National. And basically Mario OSA brought me on to kind of, Mario spreading his wings into a lot of different areas, if you will. And I'm helping to facilitate that.
By that, do you mean trying to support the touring industry more?
Yes, definitely supporting the touring industry more, but there's also, before even COVID struck, not so much the virtual side, because as much as every, you know, I always love these things like the drive-in theaters and virtuals doing so great right now. Well, there aren't any other options. That's why it's doing great right now. We tried pay-per-view once before, remember? And everybody got pissed off paying $199 when the fight lasted 18 seconds. And the only thing it really came to was wrestling, because they're idiots anyways. They're going to keep paying that money. But other than that, for the actual concert experience, one of my old clients, Dickie Betts, said it best. You know, you've got five senses, right? So you come to the show and you smell the piss, the beer, the weed. You hear the music. You feel the music if the engineer's really pumping it. You see, you know, everything else. And if you're cute later, you can taste it. But, it's across the board not going to work for live performance. The live performance, it's not a question of if, it's when we're going to come back. I'm personally excited for the future of this industry because everything is at a level playing field, so to speak. There are going to be a lot of fresh faces coming in. There's going to be a lot of fresh money of people that always wanted in that are now seeing a way in. And let's be real honest with ourselves. Some venues needed to go away and should have never existed in the first place. Some people needed to be purged. I'm sure some people wish would be purged out, or anybody else for that matter. But to say that these venues are going to be gone forever, no, they're going to maybe gone with the current owner. Already venues are already being gobbled up. I know of three venues that went under that have already been taken by new owners and being retrofitted right now. So I'm not as fatalistic, if you will, about our industry. Yes, we all have to pivot. Yes, we all have to hold on. But I'm not going to be as negative as most about what's going on.
So what's your prediction on when we'll see, you know, shows happening again?
My personal belief, at any normalcy or starting to show hints of normalcy, second quarter of 21.
Second quarter is just April then, yeah?
You're going to start seeing the planning and the pre-production at that time. And the reason why is by January, February, we're going to have much better optics on what's going on and how or if we're going to proceed. at that time, due to the pure and utter has to happen, put up or shut up, you're going to start seeing shows in whatever they're going to be start to go. You brought up, somebody brought up earlier, I believe it was you, Ken, that brought up the arena show with the spacing going on. So if you take that into consideration, right, if you've got a venue that normally holds 30,000, 35,000 people, with social distancing, you can still do 16,000 people in there. Now that's 16,000 hard tickets. That's not a small show anymore. What's shooting the foot of those type of things happening is if it's a union-held venue and the union is in no way willing to allow any pushback against the minimums and the bull and still expect a full day arena union cap, well, now it's not possible. You see what I'm saying? You're not going to push that. So every side is going to have that give and take, including the unions. If we're only putting 16,000 people in an arena, we don't need every gate open. We don't need all those minimums. Those minimums push the possibility out. So again, there's avenues that are being looked at, but there's avenues of nobody willing to give. It's kind of like everybody coming out and saying, well, the vendors are going to have to work with everybody. It's like, well, why? Your mortgage didn't change. Your bills didn't change. Why should they, you know, cut prices on staging, lights, or what have you? It's not the way it's going to go. But we do have to realize, I dislike the term new normal. We do have to realize and make happen a way forward to do this where everybody's going to have to work to do it. Now, the markets are going to change for sure. You're going to see a lot of whatever you want to list them as A minus or B plus that we're doing mid-size sheds or what have you. They're going to be relegated down to theaters, if you will. The B market's going to be on a club run. Most of this is because the buyers are going to have a plethora of choices of who to book, right? So it's, you can't put all the best acts back to back to back every week because there's no disposable income for it. So it's going to be choice set, and it's really going to be the promoters that, you know, are going to get to choose this. But behind the scenes, look at Wilmington, North Carolina, you know, Greenfield Amphitheater, Live Nation scooped that up last week. AEG is actively looking at two more venues. This is their chance to come in, pennies on the dollar, and if it's just to cover somebody's debt on the way out the door so that that person can leave on a flat slate, they're going to take the money and run.
So AEG, what kind of finances do you think a company like Live Nation has? Do you think they have billions of dollars in the bank, so to speak?
Well, I mean, we just saw 2 months ago that they took $500 million from the government of Saudi Arabia. We watched Michael Rapina spend $2 million of his own money buying Live Nation stock when it's at the lowest it ever was, 2 months before the announcement that they're getting $500 million from the government of Saudi Arabia.
Well, part of the reason I ask is because, like, last week we heard that Live Nation needs $103 million every month just to keep the doors open. And that's a lot of money, you know. So in 10 months, if they don't have billions of dollars in the bank, so to speak, they're going to be out of business.
So when you look at any business has subsidiaries. So let's look at it this way. Okay, so you have Live Nation, you have Ticketmaster, you have VIP Nation. You have Live Nation International. All these are subsidiaries of one umbrella. Yes, they have a large monthly nut. They've laid virtually everybody off and cut that nut down. They've pulled in $500 million already. Now let's look at what their selling point is to continue to pull more money and an investment in. It's going to be properties, right? It's going to be venues. AEG or Live Nation are the two that are capable of showing a portfolio, showing PAC's past strengths in the billions annually for security purposes of securing whatever funds they need, especially if they can back that up by doubling their venue numbers. So a company that you think might be hurting, and if they don't have that money, yet just last week acquired another venue, that shows me they're not hurting as bad as everybody thinks. If they're still actively out there pulling venues, then that means to me that, like everybody else, they're going to say, yeah, of course we're being hurt by this. Of course we're this or that. Yeah, I'll take that amphitheater. Yep, I'll take that amphitheater. I find that very interesting, especially when you have governments. We're not talking about a Saudi Arabian investor We're talking about the government of Saudi Arabia gave them $500 million. And that's just the one we know about, because you can't keep that kind of thing secret or, you know, private. There's no NDA on that one. But, yeah, you know, again, it's not going to be what everybody thinks. If you start looking at the facts of this, these companies are obviously doing quite well and gobbling up venues. Can't be hurting that bad.
Well, if they got that kind of money coming in, and I did read about that as well, but I think that what's going to happen is they might have a little bit too much control of what's going on in the marketplace, and they might become a monopoly. For example, one of the things that I've heard is they no longer want to give out tour advances to the bands. What have you heard about that?
Well, that's absolutely true. That memo was out. Everybody read that. So let's go back a little ways. You talk about monopoly. They played that game before. Remember, they were called Clear Channel then. So you could change the name, but the monster remains the same. You know what I mean? So as far as monopoly goes, well, I don't want to get into the political side of it, but depending on which side of the aisle you're on, that may not be frowned upon. You know what I mean? Is there a case to be made? There's always a case to be made. You know what I mean? Microsoft went through the same thing. Amazon's feeling that pressure now. You know, as far as the financial side of what they're doing and how much they're hurting, though, or how the industry is going to come out of this, they're in a position where they could say that, yes, there was an article recently, and I wish I could cite who it was and give proper credit, but they made claim that the artists have been eating well for a long time. And that being said, the reason being was when an artist shows up, let's say they're not the best-selling artist, they still get the minimum of that guarantee, whether that show undersells or not. So it was really based upon, from a promoter standpoint, when we go into settlement, let's say, is that promoter's looking at quantity with some quality. They're expecting to lose on X shows as long as they make the profit on the other shows. What they're trying to avoid now is those large 360 deals and those large guarantees that the artist basically can skate away from. Before, if a venue canceled for whatever reason that wasn't within contract and binding, they had to pay the artist 100% for that show, whether it happened or not. You know what I mean? Now, with this going in, and again, back to that same comment of living in such a litigious society, force majeure now is going to have to be really, you know, discussed. You know, it's been kind of a gray area or term before as far as contract goes. And we've always had shows with rain gauges, what have you. Now, most contracts have always said virus or what have you. But nobody's talked about what the country's going to deal with in the litigation coming out of this. So all industries quietly financially are looking at that. You're going to have all these broken leases, breach of agreements in every industry across the board. The litigation waiting to happen is unlike we've seen before in our lifetimes, for sure. And I'm not sure if it's happened before, except maybe the Great Depression. How is all of that going to be dealt with? How is that going to affect the spending dollar? That's the biggest concern. There's a lot of acts within the industry right now that would be out if it wasn't for their concern of the disposable income not being there. Nobody wants to go out on a tour and not have it sell. You know, then you have the ones that are worried about the litigious side. Then you have the ones that are morally and ethically opposed to, I don't want to be a part of the problem or spread a problem, or, you know, somebody get ill at my, you know what I mean, the conscious, if you will. So, but each one of these has the same facts of the financial burden that are going to come in. Now Live Nation wants to put a good portion of that financial burden back onto the artist now. Where without a guarantee, on my webcast for Tour Pros, I had Al DiMeola on, client of mine, good friend, and just asked Al point blank, saying, okay, no guarantees, Al, we're going to split the door, what's going to happen? And Al said, I'm not leaving the house. You know, without a guarantee, a lot of artists aren't going to go. They're not willing or incapable of putting up the X amount of zeros to fund their tour without those advances, without set guarantees. We write our budgets to management based upon the set guarantees. Booking agent books the routing, management approves the routing, we get sent that with the guarantees. We have that lump gross sum of guarantees that we start writing our budgets with and start backing out buses, crew, gear, etc., till we come down to what, you know, that possible tour profit's going to be. You know, that's how the feasibility report is put together for every tour. So now without that information, we can only then write a budget that's going to be, okay, it's going to cost you this a week. I have no idea what you're making, but this is what's going to cost. These are hard numbers. That's scaring a lot of people because some of those numbers are large. If I tell you out of the gate, look, you need $675,000 a week to fund this tour. Yeah. Okay. Well, you're not used to hearing it that way. You're used to hearing it with, you should make X on this tour. That's what the conversation you're used to getting. And even though it's still that 675, whatever it is a week, you know, I'm just throwing a number out there. I don't like erroneous numbers, but for sake of conversation, but just throwing it out there, they're not used to the conversation going that way. You know what I mean? Nor do they even really look at it that way. Most of them look at the bottom line of that spreadsheet. So that's where a lot of holdup is everybody going to play ball? Because everybody's available. Everybody's calendar's clear. Every venue's open. They now have the opportunity to go, well, we're going to get the ticket sellers right out of the gate, right? Let's just go for the best of the best.
Aren't a lot of venues already, you know, booked, so to speak, for those tours that got postponed by 1 year exactly?
So, yeah, those are the ones that I was talking about that are, they're piggybacking five different calendars of holds. So that same band that was booked for June, not only has June of next year booked for the same date, but they may also have a date in May just in case, or just in case this date, they could be holding three dates at each venue, depending on how these holds fall off. Because a lot of these artists that were booked may now not go, right? We go back to that side now of the morally and ethical ones, or the ones that say the hell with it, I'm not going, or the ones that are, you know, I'm not going till 2022 till I know everything's either normal or the whole world shit the bed. So there's all the different scenarios that are going to take place, which is why everybody's piggybacking their calendars, right? I spoke to an arena today who he just said, yeah, and he goes, I have every single date of every month booked solid next year. How many of those holds are going to fall off? Throw the dice.
So they're all tentatively booked then, yeah.
You're right. There's nothing solid booked anywhere. Basically, every manager worth their salt has already rebooked for next year, has two or three separate holds for that. Because if half the run falls off, let's remember from the live standpoint, from an artist standpoint, only X amount of shows on a tour make up profit, okay? And if you have to cancel X amount, you might as well not do the whole tour at all because you'll get into lose money. It's a very small amount of the shows that make up the profit. You know, the rest is the agreement that you've got to do it, whether it's Live Nation, AEG, whoever, 360, or you're just going. You know, there's only maybe 10 to 15 bands in the world that could just throw together shows, throw them at the wall, and know they're going to make money. That's it. That's the total amount. I think I'm being generous with that amount of bands that are capable of doing that. The rest have X amount of shows, and it's a small margin of shows that you cancel so many, you might as well cancel the whole year.
Yeah. Right.
Well, now you said something earlier I want to go back to, and that is you said that there are going to be acts that are going to be afraid, or production managers that are going to be afraid that they authorize a production company to take them out on the road, that they're not going to be fluid enough to last the whole tour. How do you see that? How do you perceive that to be projected so that a production manager doesn't have a problem sleeping at night?
Well, you know, that's going to come down to relationships is really what that's going to come down to. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus by name here. I'll mention the company because it doesn't matter. But I had somebody on a crew of mine a couple years back, or not a couple, whatever, that we nicknamed him. And even on his radio, my crew put the tape on his radio, Chapter 13. And that was his call sign on the radio, was Chapter 13. He happened to work for VER through while they were filing. Right. But it got to the point, you know, and everybody would ask him weekly, did you get paid? I mean, where are you at with this? And he was, you know, just as bewildered. But it's going to come down to the relationships. But when you look at it from a production manager standpoint, it's a valid concern. Right. Is a company really going to tell you, actually, man, we're really hurting and we're hoping your tour is going to buy us X amount of time? Are they really going to tell you that? Or are they going to tell you, hey, man, things are great. We're stoked to work with you. We got you covered.
I would say it would be the latter. We're stoked and we're gonna cover you. But a lot of people need that, you know, a lot of people need that to be able to survive, because there's only so much money in so much time. And that's really one of the things that I see, is that there's gonna have to be some trust, because there is no guarantee of any guarantee. I don't think you're gonna go to a bank and say, hey, I just picked up this tour and it's guaranteed for this many dates. Because basically, unless, like, you know, for example, you know, God forbid someone dies or there's a tour bus accident or anything that would keep the band from performing, because you mentioned the crew might have COVID. What if the band gets COVID?
Well, it's the same thing.
What kind of insurance is there?
Well, there's no insurance company in their right mind that's going to cover a virus. Because as much as you have, you know, contact tracing, you know, however you want to look at that terminology there. Anybody, oh, I got it at the show. Really? What about the gas station you stopped on the way to the show? Your friend you spoke to on the way there? Nobody's pinning this down to when you got it within a time frame that doesn't leave enough of a gray area for any legal team to work their way out of it. So that's a moot point there. But it more went back to the financials of the viability side. That if a crew member gets sick, are you shutting down that whole bus? Is that whole bus gone? Now everybody's got to test every day up through 14 days, which you can't shut a tour down for 14 days. A normal tour can't, but you know what I mean? So those are real concerns and conversations that are happening behind the scenes of, okay, so how are we going to look at this? What are we going to do here? When you start talking about the financials of the vendors per se, I mean, well, you brought up Claire earlier. So Claire got a $71 million loan on top of $10 million of PPP with, I believe, and I'm spitballing here, but I think they've got 600 employees and they've got $81 million now and just acquired Eighth Day. Somebody's making moves. You know what I mean? So, yeah, there's still, I mean, there's a lot of people that are obviously using this time to make moves and to, you know, structure themselves. But at the same token, as you even said, the conversation down to the production manager is going to be, everything's great, man. We got you covered. There's no problems at all. So what level vendors and relationships are going to be the fluid, you know, vetted ones that we know are solvent and capable is really going to just come down to who do you trust? You know what I mean? But there are vendors dropping. We know this. We've all seen what gear is hitting the market, who it comes from. I mean, I don't think there's any real secrets anymore in the industry of who's who at a certain level. You know what I mean? The smaller municipalities with their shows and stuff like that, they're going to be the hardest hit. You know what I mean? And yet those are the first shows coming back. They're going to be that acoustic duo in your local bar. That's your first shows coming back.
That's already happening here in Las Vegas now. I've now that they've raised it to 250 people, I'm starting to see those kind of acts performing in Vegas. And you'll see it more and more on social media, how these performers are, you know, live streaming or at least posting their performances to Facebook. I'm sure we've all seen that. I got another question for everybody in the room, and maybe Chris, you have some perspective on it too. I've noticed that throughout the years that Live Nation, AAG, as they buy these theaters, they start stocking it with equipment. Like, for example, at the House of Blues, when Kenny and I did the install on the house, and David did the install at the House of Blues back in Los Angeles, they bought the gear, we installed it, and then the bands would come in and use the gear that's in the shop, and then A1 and then Center Stage and a few other groups would provide service to the venue. What do you see that? Where do you see that happening with AEG and Live Nation? And can you service these venues and make a living? I'll throw that out to the room.
I mean, I'll respond if nobody wants to. AEG and Live Nation aren't in the gear business. They're relationship business, which they will. Let's take an example of Alpharetta, Georgia, the venue there, the amphitheater there, the shed, sorry. That shed has a house nut of $225,000 a night. That means when I go in there to do a show, my house nut, before I can see any points on an agreement, it's $225,000 has to be met box office. And after that, we can talk about whether I'm walking with anything on up the guarantee. That house nut, of course, is all inclusive of sound, what have you, da 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 da. And of course, everybody has their rider. But as we all know, one of the most dangerous games to get in is technology. You know, remember when digital consoles first came out? I was one of the guys kicking and screaming on my way into digital, because every month here comes another center section I got to learn, and it's the latest and the greatest, and it's going to get thrown at me. And I was just, I'd had enough. I'd still be carrying an old purple Midas around, or a Neve if I could, personally, you know, but we had to do it. But when you look at the turnover of gear and you look at the upkeep of gear, it's not finally viable or in their best interest to hold on to that, because it's, while a console will hold its value for X amount of years, you know, the boxes, Claire's making boxes. I mean, some of those boxes are as old as I am, you know what I mean? And they just keep refitting them through the shop or what have you, or she's making boxes. That's not the business Live Nation's in. Live Nation's in, if you look at holdings, they're more of a holding group that's a promoter. That's their business. Now, House of Blues, yeah, racks and stacks. That's all it was. You know, just throw racks and stacks in there, and whoever came in, now this is what you get. It's that same console. You know what I mean? And it's that's a different story, because it was a club. You know, House of Blues was a club. They're not nothing you're going to bring in, you know, any line. Plus, they weren't venues that had an easy load-in, even just for a set. You know, try to get a B3 into most House of Blues. It's a nightmare across the country. So that was one of the reasons for that decision to be made. Was stagnant gear, less load-in. It's a club. The footprints are smaller. You don't have the room. It's not a traditional venue setup. So I don't see them at all getting into the gear game.
There you go. That's a good thing. Anyway, this has been this has been more than interesting. Chris, thanks so much for jumping in. I'm just so curious to know, how did you hear about what we're doing? How did you hear about the Mastermind Group?
I didn't know it was called the Mastermind Group. That's intriguing. your Facebook, I ever ran you go on and see what was going on. And Ken was introduced to me just online, I think through Rigan, just recently, or somehow or another, we came across each other's path, and I saw his name attached as well. So I'd watched one of the ones you had done briefly. And this one, when I went on, it actually still says that it's a September 30th show, and what you're discussing is still whatever. So there was no new updated on your thing today for me to get information on, for that matter. So I reached out and asked, but as I was reaching, I wasn't getting any responses. But there were a couple comments made that I wanted to answer to earlier. So that's why I was looking to engage, just to bring up how, you know, somebody had talked about production managers and how they're looking at it. I said, you know, I'll chime in and give my bit of how we're looking at it. And there's a lot of avenues, because we not only have to look at, is the vendor solvent? We have to look, is the artist willing? Are the venues still there? Are they solvent? And here's the other point that nobody's even talking about either. What about local hands? Not everyone's a union. You know, it's not all IOTC. So, you know, how many local hands went and got jobs? You know what I mean? And aren't coming.
That's going to be the subject of one of Jan's future mastermind groups, is that very subject right there. Oh, labor.
Yeah. Well, the local groups, I've been talking to some crewing companies and what they're doing and what their plans are. It's more difficult, you know, like to put together a weekly show like this, believe it or not, is more work than you would imagine, you know? And all of a sudden I found myself like dealing with this, should I say, bank fraud thing that all of a sudden pulled my mind and my energies and everything else away from all of the plans that I wanted to do. So the reality is that right now I feel like we're at the very tail end of the bank fraud and I can get back to my normal life, you know? So that's I'm feeling, and I'm gonna work on these shows. Also, I wanna do a show about, diversity with women and, you know, and with color. So basically, you know, from all over the world, I'd like to do an international show, because as Sound Broker, we do have international clients. So I just don't usually invite them.
Reach out to Lance Jackson of Roses of Color United and Misty Roberts. I actually started the diversity in touring at the conference where I pulled in Roses of Color and Lance. I helped prepare the big one for women in touring. With Misty Roberts. We still do diversity in tour, but Lance Jackson is the key one on diversity as far as Roadies of Color, and Misty Roberts still does women in touring. I'm used to it. I do them for tour pros and for the conference. So,
okay, so let me give you an opportunity to promote your show. Tell us about it. What's the name of it?
Mine is just haphazard. I have the personal one I do under Tour Pros where I just say whatever the hell I want and I don't really care about who I piss off. And the other one is under, obviously, Live Production Summit, which is under their banner. We don't do them with any frequency. Currently, what I'm doing is we're waiting and allowing things to percolate to where certain aspects of the tour have been either sorted out or there's a new solid foundation of something to look at within the industry that we want to take on and kind of go that route. I've been thinking about reaching out to Bill Kinney, though, over in Boston, who's a provider of hands, you know, local hands, and seeing what they're doing at Kinney Productions as far as that goes, because that is another concern.
Well, I appreciate that. I will be reaching out to you. You put your number in the chat. I'll reach out to you, see if maybe we could combine, do something together. Because like I said, we're all in this together. I mean, really, everybody's in this together. If you're in this business, you are my brother right now. You know, you are my brother. And that's all there is to it, because I've got to look out for my brother. And that's the whole concept of why I put this group together, to put like minds together, to see how we could survive these tough times. And I really thank you, Chris, for coming in and adding your, and adding your, you know, your more than your 2 cents. I'd say you put in more than, like, you know, 25 cents worth, maybe even a half a buck worth.
I'll give you change.
A dollar.
Anyway, does anybody else have anything they want to add right now? Anybody
want to? I know on one of the other conversations, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he's a IOTC steward in Kansas somewhere. But on one of the conversations, they had a drive-in thing come up, and what they normally would have staffed in 30 minutes took 4 days.
Oh, that was Tim Murdoch.
Tim, yeah. Yeah, to get enough people. So, yeah, it's going to be an issue, you know.
Four people I know of that are sound guys have taken full-time jobs. Don't know if they even plan to come back, but, you know, they were pretty decent too. So it's going to be interesting when it starts to happen.
Well, I would say what Kenny Newman and I talked about yesterday, that when the jobs do come back, they'll be back. The crews will be back. It may take them a little while. It might not be easy to get them to do one-offs, but if there are tours, I think that they will. I think that the thrill of the tour and to do what it is your life heart tells you that that's what you're meant to be doing, that's worth more than working at Lowe's or Walmart's or whatever else you're doing. Also, but you know, you gotta realize there is a, you know, to get a little philosophical right now, everybody pays a price. Whatever it is, we all have a value, whatever that value might be. So if you take a job and you work for $20 a week, your value of your life is you're going to, for $20 an hour, you're going to invest your life for 40 hours a week to make that $20. If you are making $1 million a week, that's your price. It doesn't mean I'm not saying that it means that that's your value system. I'm just saying that you've agreed to the terms of that $20 an hour, you can survive and you like what you're doing, or you're forced into what they're doing because you have to, you need that money. So the reality is, when I was started Soundbroker, and I'll give you an analogy here, where I'm coming from. When I started Soundbroking, I was doing stand-up comedy and I was starving to death, because what I found out by doing stand-up comedy is really you have to be funny. I mean, if you're not funny, you ain't gonna make any money. What I learned in that respect is that I was struggling and I wasn't ready to give up, because when you're starting something, when you're starting especially comedy, you invite all your friends and family and they're tired of your jokes because you're just struggling to get your identity. And while I was going through this period, Morris Leiter, I think I'm sure you all know Morris Leiter, you know, who was Michael Jackson's advance man, Phil Collins guy, ZZ Top's monitor guy, you know, been around. He made me an offer that I couldn't refuse, working for Disney with his Disney Fest Asia. And then all of a sudden I found I was making enough money that I really didn't mind not doing the comedy. And then as I started progressing in life, I started making such a good living doing what I'm doing that comedy became a thing of the past for me, whereas I now believe in what I'm doing and I love what I do. I love being able to assist people in getting their projects off the ground. And so I thank everyone who's ever allowed me to help them or assist them in putting their project by selling them sound, light, staging, video, whatever it is. But I want to tell you that we're all in this together. And that's why I'm doing soundbroker.com. That's why I'm doing the mastermind group. Soundbroker.com, I don't know how long that's going to be around. That might be around forever. It might be around, it might not. But what the reality is that we will all be what we have today and what we're sharing will be around forever because it's humanity. And I keep saying to you, make sure you reach out to the people that you know and say hello and make sure that you're staying in touch with these people. I'm not saying you're going to be able to save their lives, but I will tell you that it will be a benefit to both you and them to let people know that they're not alone. And that's what I have to say. And if anybody has anything else to say right now, I please chip in right now and
Based on those jokes you told us today, it's a good thing that you moved on in life, Jim.
That's right. I'll tell you a funny thing. I'll tell you a funny story, a little stunning. So when Morris Leiter called me up, he said to me, he says, I'm working for Disney and I need your help. And I said, working for Disney? Great. What do you need me to do? You want me to sing? You want me to dance? Am I going to warm up the audience? He says, what the hell are you talking about? I need you to sell some gear. You're the only one that could do that. I said, Morris, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I can't do that because I'm a comedian. And without missing a beat, he said to me, Jan, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard you say. And that is the truth. And so to this day, I'm still selling gear. And I try to do humor every once now. You know, blah, 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 blah.
So anyway, Jan, why don't you tell a quick story about how you named the company?
I don't know how I named the company.
Come on. You told me that a few times.
Well, it started out a long time ago in Hollywood Hills. Basically, this is past the statute of limitations. So I was selling some drugs at the time, you know, and somebody said, hey, can I get a couple of these things? And, I'll pay you back on Tuesday. So Tuesday, we're all up at their house and they say to me, hey, I didn't get to the bank, Jan. Can I write you a check? And I said, yeah. And they said, who should I make it out to? And they said, I said, make it out to Cash. And from that moment on, I was known as Cash. So there you have it. And so when I started the company, seeing I couldn't cash that check, I had to change the name of the company to Cash Landy. There you have it. That's the story. And
That's not the story I was talking about, Jan.
I thought you were talking about the illicit selling of hamburgers since you.
Oh, Soundbroker, the way I got the name Soundbroker.
Soundbroker, yeah, tell me.
All right. Well, the way I got the name Soundbroker, you know, it's like one of those things that when you're supposed to be doing something that you're supposed to be doing, the universe steps in. That's really what happens. And so I was working for I just finished doing the JBL job and Harman hired me to move their discontinued inventory, but they didn't want me to work out of the house. They wanted me to work in Reseda in their office building. So I am now... I'm doing comedy still. I'm doing production work. I'm selling speakers. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm doing a million things. So the phone rings at Harman and I answer the phone. And instead of saying hello, I got so confused that I just said, hello? And the guy says, oh, I think I've got the wrong number. I was looking for the sound broker. And I said, hey, that's me. That's me. And that's how it all came together. And ever since that day, you know, I said, hey, look, man, let me call you right back. And I went and registered the name soundbroker.com. And the guy never called me back. So I have no idea who it was.
What year was that?
That was in 1997.
It was decades ago, like three decades. The 90s, the zeros, the 10s, now the 20s. So four decades.
Here's a funny story too, you know, so when I started the business, you know, I was trying to get some confidence in people. So I was talking with Kenny and Kenny says, well, how long you been in the business? That's a couple of years. He says, that's decades. I said, you can take it from here.
So because Paul Anka, who I used to work for, who started in the late 50s, would always say to his audience, I have performed in four or five decades, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and now the 90s. 5 decades I've been performing, right? And I was like, Jan, you've been in the 90s and the zeros, or the thousands, whatever you call them, right? That's 2 decades you've been in this business. And so we took advantage of that little, you know,
and so I've been in the business for decades, and now it's legit. I have been in the business for decades.
Right.
You know, and so like people say, well, you know, people say to me, you know, oh yeah, you're promoting your business. I'm not promoting this business. I mean, if you don't know Sound Broker, then, you know, you'll make it up that you know. If somebody says to you, hey, you know, you can call Sound Broker, they're not going to say they don't know of it, because it sounds like a name that you should know. So they say, oh yeah, yeah, I spoke to those guys 20 years ago. And that's very possibly true. But regarding this particular mastermind group, I keep saying to you guys, please invite your friends. If you think this is worthwhile and you think that there's something here that you can share, don't be afraid to send out that invitation that I sent you. So, you know, but don't send out your invitation, because they will, I will put the link in. Well, the link goes in the emails. So I sent it out all of the emails. So you know what link to share. And I really do appreciate everybody who comes, you know, Brian, Kenny, Chris, you know, Steve.
I see Chris.
Yeah, but you guys have been there from day one. You guys have put up with my crap from day one, you know? And I really appreciate
it. It's not
crap.
It's all good stuff. It's all just trying to support each other during this time when we need support.
That's right. That's what I think. So if anybody else has anything else to say, now would be the time to say it. Otherwise, I'm going to say 73, 6, 2, and even. And just remember my mantra, you make it happen. So go out and make it happen. And, you know, same time, same place next week. All right?
Sounds good. Thanks, Jan. Nice seeing you.